At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Christina Martinez. A top curator at the Dallas Museum of Art resigned abruptly over the weekend, citing what he called inappropriate behavior. As KERA's Bill Zeeble reports, Gavin Delahunty was the DMA's senior curator of contemporary art.
Delahunty has not spoken publicly. He issued a statement Saturday apologizing for those affected by his, quote, inappropriate behavior, unquote. He said he didn't want the allegations against him to be a distraction to the museum or colleagues. Delahunty brought noteworthy exhibits, including a landmark Jackson Pollock show, to Dallas after arriving 3 years ago from the Tate in London. It's unclear exactly what kind of behavior Delahunty engaged in. Mark Clayton sits on the Dallas City Council's Arts and Culture Committee.
You know, I would hate to speculate, but in the issue that was non-financial, I don't think we necessarily need to have a role in that. It's not our job to handle HR matters, but it is our job, if Dallas taxpayer dollars are involved, that we make sure that those dollars are being protected.
The museum says it does not disclose information about personnel matters. No matter why Delahunty resigned, Clayton is upset.
I don't know if you can ever be surprised, because people are fallible, but I think it's always disappointing when you see an organization as good as that one is to have something like that. I think it's just disappointing because it's a cultural, you know, institution.
The museum's communications director, Jill Bernstein, says the search for a replacement will begin as soon as possible. Bill Zeeble, KERA News.
One of the most influential ballet teachers in North Texas has died. Tanju Tuzer was a professional dancer, choreographer, and founder of Tuzer Ballet. In 1977, he and his wife Patricia opened the Tuzer Dance School in Richardson. They've taught thousands of young dancers. Several became professionals. Tuzer was diagnosed with colon cancer in 2014. He told KERA's Jerome Weeks that perseverance and daring were the most important lessons he could impart to his dancers. He lived that lesson as he faced his illness.
When you go on stage, you're in the arena, you're on your own. The fear is natural. But how you use that fear, that is the importance there. Hold your head up and dare.
The Tuzer Ballet's 33rd annual production of The Nutcracker is scheduled for December 16th and 17th. Friends and supporters are creating a foundation in Tuzer's name. Learn more at artandseek.org. 15 million children in America live in families with incomes below the poverty line. A new Frontline documentary explores how poverty affects children by talking to kids as young as 9 about their experiences. Jessa Newman is a producer of the documentary. Today on Think, guest host Courtney Collins talked with him about poverty from a kid's point of view.
I think when you tackle a subject such as poverty, it comes with a lot of preconceived stereotypes, and people seem to have, and you hear the same rhetoric time and time again, that poor people are stupid, poor people are dirty, poor people, often accused of sort of choosing to be that way. And I think that when you start to break those down and you need to look at them, the thing about adults is you can sort of, you know, lay blame, if you like, to an adult who had decisions, made choices. But with kids, there's a purity in the fact that, you know, they really don't have a choice of the world they're in. They are there by default of their parents. So I think if you want to start looking at this and start trying to look what's behind those stereotypes would be, and what is the truth, I think that kids have an amazing platform about which to tell you this.
The Frontline documentary Poor Kids airs Wednesday night at 9 on KERA TV. This episode of Think re-airs tonight at 10. You can subscribe to the podcast at think.kera.org. Coming up tomorrow morning, KERA's Bill Zeeble has more on a new report that shows one of every 5 North Texas kids lives in poverty, and more than 250,000 are hungry as their parents struggle to feed them. Those are just a few of the findings from a report issued by Children's Health, the Dallas-based Children's Hospital Network. Tune in tomorrow at 8:22 during Morning Edition. This week is the 54th anniversary of the John F. Kennedy assassination. Previously sealed FBI files on the incident continued to be released. SMU historian Jeffrey Engel told KERA's Sam Baker the contents so far offer some interesting insight, but there are no new answers to the main question at hand.
Have you read or heard of anything in these new documents to contradict findings of the Warren Commission that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone?
No, there's really been nothing new in these documents that should change our opinion from the Warren Commission, that should change the idea that there was a lone gunman. There's been a lot of anticipation, obviously. It's been really fascinating to watch people's excitement build, hoping that they're going to find something completely revelatory, something that would completely explain away every problem and every quandary that we've had trying to figure out what happened in November of 1963. But these records have really been more about the process of the investigation than they were about the actual assassination itself.
Was there any value in seeing that?
Quite a lot of value, and I think value in some ways that we're starting to understand why the CIA in particular did not want these records being revealed, because they show the CIA not in a great light in many cases in how they were conducting their operations more generally. You know, there's always a statement from intelligence agencies and security agencies that they want to keep records under wraps because of what they call sources and methods. Essentially, if you looked at these documents, you would see how we do our business, and that could hurt us down the road. Well, the truth is, in the 60s and 70s, the CIA was doing a lot of business they're not proud of. And so we're seeing them really expose how they operated in ways that they wish they had not now, 40 years later.
Was there one thing in particular that stuck out to you?
For me, as a person who is really interested in openness within government and also making sure that we get classified records released to us in a timely fashion, it was really fascinating to see CIA internal documents saying, when there were Freedom of Information requests for documents, do not let this person have these documents. Tell them it's sources and methods. It wasn't sources and methods. It was just something which they were embarrassed about, essentially. But they were able to use that, you know, catchphrase, if you will, that get-out-of-jail-free card, in a sense, which is a phrase that they can use whenever they don't want to turn something over. And we've always known that, of course, they can use that phrase and use that justification to keep documents out of the public domain. But we've always known they could do it and say that's what they're doing. And now we actually have a piece of evidence that shows, yes, this is an example of them just using this justification for the point of keeping the documents safe.
All that said, why do you think it's been so difficult for some people to accept that Oswald acted alone?
You know, I think there's three fundamental reasons, overlapping, no doubt. The first is that there is certainly a subset of society that just simply refuses to accept the easy answer. The easy answer, to be honest, is usually the right answer. They just want to see a conspiracy. They want to see the world more complex. And in a sense, they want the world to be more complex because they like the idea that there is actually somebody in charge in a real sense. You know, and the second reason is because that there are these coincidences, and the more you pull on strings, the more you realize there are more strings to pull. It doesn't mean the strings are connected to anything. And then the third reason, which I think is actually the most profound, is that we are still dealing with the trauma of having lost this presidency, which in a real sense was the end of America's innocence as it conceived of itself. I mean, we don't really think of the 1960s beginning until Kennedy's assassination, and of course we know how the 1960s ended in tragedies like Vietnam and racial tensions and civil rights tensions. So there's a real sense in which we don't necessarily want to believe that it could just be a simple act of murder, that perhaps there's some greater meaning given what we know subsequently came to be a very tumultuous decade that we date back to that assassination.
Jeffrey Engel, thank you for being with me.
It's good to talk to you.
Jeffrey Engel is director of the Center for Presidential History at SMU. And finally, a programming note. After reports of sexual misconduct by TV host Charlie Rose, PBS is suspending distribution of his interview show. The program has aired at midnight on KERA television. Tonight at that time, KERA will re-air the documentary Beyond a Year in Space. In the forecast, tonight it'll be mostly clear with a low around 47. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high in the upper 60s. It's 60 degrees in Dallas and Fort Worth. This is KERA News.